This is Small Business Conversations with Akona Machoba, unlocking essential advice, opinions, and key issues that affect South Africa's small business community.
Welcome to another edition of the Small Business Conversations podcast, MoneyWeb's weekly SME podcast highlighting critical issues affecting South Africa's small business environment. This week, we have Robin Keat joining us in studio to speak about the sustainability of entrepreneurship in South Africa. Robin is the operations manager of Bright Wolf South Africa, a consulting firm that drives sustainable business practices from strategy to implementation. Hi, Robin. Thank you for joining us.
Hey, Akona. Thanks for having me.
So firstly, Robin, I want to touch on your personal journey. I find it quite interesting that you started off as a consultant at the Bright Wolves Belgium office in 2020. And fast forward almost 3 years later, you are now part of the team heading up the South Africa office. Tell us more about that.
Sure. Starting from the very beginning, how I ended up in Belgium, which is where Bright Wolves, or our parent company, is based. I did my master's abroad in Belgium and actually did an internship at Bright Wolves. This was in 2020. I loved the company. I was drawn to the people and the culture, and essentially I never left. So I started working there full time. And given that there was the COVID-19 pandemic, travel was forbidden, I hadn't come home or seen my family in about 2 years. And so I really wanted to spend an extended period of time in South Africa. And so one could say that the Bright Wolves South Africa journey started quite organically. Bright Wolves tries to find win-win opportunities, and this was no different. Here was an opportunity for us to have a project in South Africa. I would personally win by spending Christmas and a longer period with my family. And so I worked on a digital transformation project in the healthcare sector, which was really, really exciting. And I think the key learning, which was maybe the light bulb moment, is that in everything we do, we try and approach a problem from a blank page. So we use the frameworks that are typical to consulting as inspiration, but you try and look at the problem at hand. And this, in my opinion, means that our skill set is universally transferable. And yeah, essentially that was then the light bulb that went off to say, maybe we should investigate something here.
So I just want us to take a few steps back. Bright Wolves is a Belgium-based company, correct? And now you've already established a South African office. Why was that the decision that was taken, and what need was there that necessitated the establishment of the local office?
Well, I miss the sunshine. No, but in all seriousness, we looked at it very honestly. We tried to take the bias out of it. So it was a way that we help our clients with market entry strategies. You try and answer three questions. Should we enter the market? That's your market assessment. If yes, how should we go about it? That's your business plan. And then, does it make financial sense? So we looked at that. And if I touch upon the market assessment part, interestingly enough, if you take the consulting market in South Africa, it's actually 50% larger than in Belgium, which is not insignificant considering that the GDP is much lower. I should nuance that and say that we couldn't separate government spend versus private, and I know the government does spend a lot on consulting services, but just to say it's a large market and it's also growing. So it's growing at roughly 12% compound annual growth rate. And in Belgium, we see it stagnating. So that's if you really look purely at the numbers. But on the other perspective, which I find probably more important, the vision of Bright Wolves is to have a positive and sustainable impact for our people, our clients, and the economy at large. And we felt that there was a great opportunity for us to have positive impact in South Africa. I think some of the other consulting firms have had their fingers burnt, and there's a need for more value-driven consultancies in this country. And I think also one of our values is entrepreneurship. We try and be very entrepreneurial. I think Bright Wolves South Africa is testament to that. And I see that in South Africans too. So there was an alignment there. And it just, I mean, the market is not perfect, but there was sufficient reason to try.
So I thought that was very interesting because we do know that South Africa does have a not so great taste in the mouth when it comes to consulting firms. I'm not going to mention any names, but it's not been the best experience, both on the consultancies and the public. So I want to just get a sense of who Bright Wolves speaks to or works with. You did mention that there can't really be a separation between government and maybe private entities. But in terms of your function and who you work with and who you're assisting? Is it more entrepreneurs that you're speaking to, or are you speaking to government, or is it a mixed bag?
We are sector agnostic, and I would say that we've worked with companies of every size. We've worked with startups, and we've worked with listed companies internationally. I believe our strength is there, and what makes us unique is that we really tailor our team design to the problem at hand, which means that we can work with startups because we're not going to send a full team if it doesn't require that. The cost is therefore lower for the startup using the consultancy services, whereas on a larger project, it might necessitate different types of expertise, a different team design. So we're not targeting a company of any specific size. Sector as well, we have our, let's say, priority sectors, but we've built up a lot of credentials based on our European office, now our South African office as well. And we're tailoring it to the local market, which means we will have a sharp wedge strategy, but not eliminating anything as such. Maybe my colleagues won't like me saying this, but I think we will stay away from government for now.
I think that's going to be a welcomed commitment. So just speaking on your journey. Mm. So you really had a quick rise to senior roles and taking up responsibility, if I understand your story correctly. Mm. You're already the operations manager at the local office. And I don't know if you can speak to me on your journey and the differences that you've seen working in the Belgium office and in South Africa. What have been the key differences that have defined the local market separate from what you normally used to?
I think before I answer that, my role in Belgium was entirely different to my role in South Africa. So in Belgium, I was a consultant working entirely on projects, whereas here I'm a consultant, but I'm also co-leading an organization. So I can't maybe make a direct comparison between my personal role. What I see differently in the environment is South Africa is much more relationship-based. So finding projects, for example, takes a lot longer. That sales cycle, you're establishing trust, the decision making is slightly slower, whereas Brussels in particular is transactional. Things move a lot faster. So this environment is very rewarding, but it can also be frustrating when things are taking a lot longer. And I think from my personal perspective, it's been a huge learning curve. In our journey to get to South Africa, we had certain hypotheses of what we thought the market was like. Even as a South African, when Domin, my business partner, and I did a prospection trip in July, some of those hypotheses were completely thrown out the window. So it's been a huge, huge learning curve, very rewarding. But I'm happy to be home and to be working here.
Do you want to maybe shed some light on those initial hypotheses and how they've changed now that you're here and you've actually seen it for yourself?
Sure. Maybe one actually touches upon the second part of the discussion that we're having today, but I felt that sustainability wasn't even on the radar closely in South Africa. Mm. That was my perception. I see there are essentially two waves. There's a digital transformation wave that you see in companies, yes, and then there's a sustainable transformation. And in Europe, you see, for example, the digital transformation peaking. And in South Africa, it's maybe a couple years behind. And I thought it would follow the same trajectory for sustainability, so that it's not even on people's radar. And I was surprised to see, I think there's a difference between having a conversation about it and implementing it, but it's at least part of the conversation.
Mm-hmm. And what is that conversation looking like right now? What does sustainability mean in the South African local market?
I think we need to look at it quite broadly. South Africa, we need to remember that there is the environmental aspect, but there's also very much the social and the governance aspect of sustainability. And essentially, incorporating sustainability into your business simply means that you're building a business that's profitable, that's growing, but also has a net positive impact on the environment and the society in which it operates. And for me, at least, the sustainability aspect is not about CO2. That is an element of it, yes, but it's about resilience. And we've just seen the COVID-19 pandemic. We see load shedding. There are droughts in the country. And the question that everyone should be asking themselves is, how can I make sure that my business is resilient, that it can continue to survive no matter how the environment changes? And how can we adapt our business model.
Mm. And what has been the kind of reception that you've gotten from entrepreneurs? Because you did mention that your company does focus a lot on entrepreneurship as well. What has the reception been like from entrepreneurs when you speak sustainability? Are they receptive of it? Are they willing to give you an ear, or is there hostility there?
I wouldn't say there's hostility. I would say that a lot of, let's look at the SMEs. I don't think they feel the burning platform yet. So if you take, for example, listed companies, multinationals, they're aligning to certain regulations, to certain standards. So you see them implementing sustainability or incorporating it, at least in their strategy. SMEs, the conversation is there, as I mentioned, but... And I should maybe say I'm by no means an expert here, so everything I'm saying is from our perspective. But what we hear is, okay, I first need to get my product off the ground and then we'll think of sustainability. Or I first need to become profitable and then I'll think of sustainability. But as I mentioned, it really needs to be incorporated into your business practices. And it's not a big bang approach. It's being 1% better every day. It's implementing small things. So I think to come back to the question on what has the reception been like from entrepreneurs, it's been, let's listen, I'm open to listening, but I don't know how to go about it, potentially.
So one thing that we've touched on even prior to this conversation is the cost of running a sustainable business. People can hear the word sustainability and start freaking out because all they see is rand signs going flashing off. So, and we already know that big companies, JSE listed companies, are spending big bucks on subscribing to these regulations, staying in line with these COP principles that have been set out at these big meetings, global meetings. And for SMEs or SME owners, entrepreneurs, hearing sustainability can be threatening for them in terms of their bottom line. How do you speak to the cost of sustainability? How do you make it affordable and reachable so that they are not saying, okay, wait for me to get the product on the shelves before I can think about it?
It's a really good question. I think I would have to turn it around a little bit and say the cost of not thinking about sustainability is larger. There, you're talking about potentially reputational damage. You're looking at customer churn because increasingly customers are wanting to see, okay, does this product or service align with my own values too? There's a regulatory framework. So as I mentioned, maybe the burning platform is not yet there, but it's coming. It for sure is coming. 30 years ago, people would have said, oh, I don't need a website. What's this digital nonsense? That's not going to affect me or whatever. And now look at where we are. So I think it will be the same for sustainability. I'm not an idealistic person. So I want to see a benefit in it. And that's how we're also wanting to approach the market at Brightwolves, to say there's a cost benefit too. So let's take sustainability. If you're wanting to look at waste management, for example, you would put in place more efficient processes. You would try and reduce your waste. You would try and recycle, whatever the case may be. There's a cost benefit there. You're reducing your costs. Or there could be an upside potential of finding new revenue streams. And SMEs here play a very big role because they're agile enough to think innovatively. They might be cash strapped enough to have to think very differently. And you see then that new ideas come about. And I think that's the way that we should look at sustainability. Yes, there is a cost factor. But if you come back to what I mentioned previously about being 1% better, it's not a big bang. So my last example would be something that we do for clients is, given the load shedding issue now, that's not going to go away.
Unfortunately.
Yeah, unfortunately. So, okay, you would see companies that had implemented, you know, more renewable solutions a couple years ago, they're in a better place now than some other companies. But there are a lot of SMEs that can't go and install solar panels. That's a huge capital investment. So what about doing an energy audit and you find all the small ways that you can reduce your energy usage so that energy requirements that you're left with can hopefully result in you not having to install as many solar panels, or your reliance is much less. And that's the way we should be thinking about it. It's not scary. There's opportunity in it.
You've already mentioned actually just now some solutions that SME owners, entrepreneurs can think of to drive a more sustainable operation. But if an entrepreneur approaches Brightwolves to consult, What is the process for determining the sustainability initiatives that that entrepreneur can implement? Also, are these initiatives a once-off tick box exercise, or is it a continuous process of constantly implementing new initiatives?
I think it's always a journey. And I think maybe that's how it should be seen, that yes, you could look at it as a tick box and you will probably get there. But again, regulations are going to continue changing. Your competitors are going to continue changing. So for that competitive advantage, one needs to continue improving. But to come back to the first part, how would we go about it? It really depends on the case at hand. But let's say that it's a company that's on the maturity scale is very immature, let's say, on their sustainability roadmap. Mm-hmm. We would sit down with them and see where they are now. So if we're talking the environmental sustainability part, that's really your impact assessment, looking at the value chain as well and seeing, okay, what is my impact on the environment? And that would give you a number figure. And you can then build a roadmap from that. On the social aspect, it can be internal, your employee engagement, or also looking at what is your impact on the society? How are you uplifting society? So you're wanting to start from a baseline. Then you put in actionable measures. So that's our whole premise. Why we exist is to have, as I mentioned, sustainable impact. And that doesn't mean that we're going to, as a company, deliver slides that look pretty. that's hopefully one component that they convey great information. But the way we would go about it would be to say, okay, here are 30 initiatives. Here are three that you can implement tomorrow. And you test it out. People, in our experience, testing is the best way to get people to try new things by saying, okay, we're going to trial it out for 2 weeks, a month, and then we reevaluate. And hopefully you've already realized some benefit. And these will just compound and add upon each other. So I don't know if I've answered your question, but it really depends on the case at hand. But you do try and see where is the company now. You define where they want to go, which will be a continuous journey, but you have to put in measurable small wins along the way to keep the momentum.
Mm. You mentioned earlier that businesses in South Africa are known to be resilient. Mm. For me personally, it's become something that kind of agitates me a little bit when I hear the word resilience, because I feel like it's been used sometimes to excuse some of the things that are happening. Coming to my question around how conducive is the local market economy in South Africa to incentivize entrepreneurs and SMEs to drive these sustainable practices? Load shedding is an issue. I can speak of Gauteng or South Africa, actually. Load shedding is an issue. Gauteng water is such a problem. If you live anywhere in this province, sometimes you have water, sometimes you don't have water. It just depends. But there are certain things that are just deadlocks in my ability to run my operations in my company that are just immediate stresses. How do I, in that context, still think sustainability and be committed to that? Because for me, it just seems like it can be the last thought in my mind.
I get that. And I would tend to agree with you. I think often the resilience word is thrown around to...
It's very loaded.
Yes, it's loaded because it kind of has the underlying assumption that, okay, it's now on the private individuals to solve some issues that maybe should be on the more public aspect. But okay, that's a separate conversation.
We're not going to touch on that now.
What I meant from the resilience aspect is how can I, as a business owner, make sure that if suddenly there's no water in Gauteng for 6 months, how can I continue operating? And maybe that's a terrible example because that's a really, really hard question to answer. But again, it's a unique scenario. If we look at, for example, fintech, okay, that boomed in Africa because suddenly we were looking at it from a resource-constrained perspective. And then you think completely differently. If someone has to come to me and tell me I have to sell 10 projects by the end of this week, I will have to think differently because it's a really hard ask, let's say, as a new business. And it's the same here, maybe. If we're in a resource-constrained environment and resources, including financial, and maybe to come back to how conducive is the environment, I think that's a real challenge, is the access to financing. I had a conversation with a really interesting company last week who's in the renewable energy space, and they have plants here in South Africa, but they said their biggest challenge and why they're looking elsewhere is because they can easier get financing abroad. And here it's very, very difficult for them to get that. So the capital investment is just impossible. Mm. So that's somewhere where we really need to work on. But the short-term solution is really just to try and think, what is in my locus of control? And how can I just think very differently about it in this environment? I don't have the answers right now.
Yeah.
But
no, that's fair. That's fair. But I want to just circle back to that point you just made now about how fintechs came out of just an extreme need at the time. Mm. And I'm wondering, in your engagements now with entrepreneurs and small business owners, if you're seeing maybe a rise of businesses looking to solve the issues that we're having currently. So I mentioned the water issue and I mentioned load shedding. I don't even have to mention load shedding. Everyone knows it's a problem. So are you seeing people coming through now trying to solve those solutions? And is that some maybe a growth point for our economy?
For sure. I think, yeah, given the load shedding aspect, you see a lot of startups coming through in all different aspects. You have the more technology aspect of it. I know Cape Town just put out a tender for players to try and help them with a kind of an energy platform. Yeah, there are a lot of people coming with interesting business models where it's renting solar panels out and then selling the electricity at a lower rate. There are a lot of ideas on the education aspect, so maybe touching more on the social. One has a lot of startups that are looking at that. How do we uplift our economies and our youth, for example, make education accessible, make it affordable from the youth upwards? The burden shouldn't always be on SMEs and entrepreneurs. There's, of course, it represents an opportunity for new people to enter the market, but it needs to be a collective effort. We need to see the incumbents also putting that move towards more sustainable practices, making sure that, for example, if you're a mine, that the mining town isn't left in a worse position than when you entered. It's complex, but yeah, I think that would be my starting point.
No, definitely. And just to end off our conversation, I'm just wanting to circle back to where we started off with how bigger companies kind of have these mandates that they have to follow and how you mentioned that it's going to soon come close to the small businesses and entrepreneurs to also live up to those regulations or those mandates.
Yeah.
What is the future looking like for SMEs in terms of sustainability? How close is that heat and how can they prepare themselves for that coming and to be ready and steady once those rules do apply to them and they have to also kind of just shift the way that they operate?
I think it's coming sooner than what they would like to realize. For example, there's a new regulation that was just put in. It's called CBAM, and it's essentially making sure that exporters to Europe comply by the same regulations that the European companies comply by. And this means carbon disclosure, etc. Now, that has a huge impact on our citrus export, on steel, on even smaller enterprises that are exporting wine, whatever it is. And that is in effect from October this year. So it's really coming. It's unavoidable. The sooner that companies get started, the better. I think I would love to. Our mandate in South Africa is to help South African companies. I think we have, as Bright Wolves, a bit of a global perspective because we're centered in the hub of Europe. We're in Brussels, or our headquarters are there. We have a local workforce in South Africa, a local office. And we can then help companies with whatever challenge that they may be facing. But I think the first step is just to acknowledge it's not going away. It's a bit like the digital transformation.
And that is Robin Keat, the operations manager of Bright Wolves South Africa. Thank you once again for your insights, Robin.
Thank you so much, Akona. I really enjoyed this.
If you enjoyed this podcast, please like and follow Small Business Conversations and don't forget to share our episodes. If you want to contribute to the conversation, you can tweet me at machoba_a or you can email us at smepodcast@moneyweb.co.za to share your thoughts and suggestions for future conversations. Till next time.
You've been listening to Small Business Conversations with Akona Machoba. To listen to more MoneyWeb podcasts, go to moneyweb.co.za, the MoneyWeb app, or your favorite podcast platforms. MoneyWeb, your trusted source for business and investment insights.